The following program is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Welcome to Humanities Connection, a production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. I'm Bob Mann. We're going to open up the program in just a couple of seconds with a segment on something called the environmental humanities. And later on, we're going to take you to Sauerland. That doesn't exactly sound enticing, but it's a really fascinating place in central Jersey that's rich in natural wonders, but also very rich in American history. And it's all coming up right now on Humanities Connection. There are very significant questions in the humanities which are deeply connected to environmental issues. That's where this whole concept of the environmental humanities comes into play, and that's what we're talking about on this segment of Humanities Connection. My guest here at the WFDU studio is James Hynek. He is superintendent of schools in the Caldwell, West Caldwell School District, and he has received something called an incubation grant from NJCH for a collaborative project which has to do with the so-called environmental humanities. James, thank you for taking the trip to be here in the studio with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about the idea of what an incubation grant is. What does that mean? I mean, we've talked with a lot of people on this program who have had grants. I know what incubation means, but what's an incubation grant?
Well, the New Jersey Council for the Humanities offers these incubation grants as a way to explore certain ideas. It might be an idea or a project that is not quite fully formed yet, but the incubation grant gives you an opportunity to try out some pilot events or initiate some discussions, explore some different kinds of readings, and perhaps move towards a more fully formed project.
What you've given me as background information for the interview certainly looks like you've got something which is going to come together here from this incubation process. Tell us a little bit about, for example, one of the things that you've already had at a local library in the Caldwell area to kick this off, to get it going.
Yes, so the incubation grant is actually a collaborative project with our two local libraries, the Caldwell Public Library and the West Caldwell Public Library, and along with our humanities scholar, Dr. John Davenport from Fordham, we've planned a few events at the libraries. So in early April, Dr. Davenport gave a brief presentation where he shared some clips from a film called The Journey of the Universe, and then talked about some of the environmental issues that are raised there, some of the philosophical aspects, particularly environmental ethics, and gave us a chance in a pretty small setting to discuss those important ideas.
How did it go?
It went well. It was not as, it's not as well attended as we would have liked. You would love to see tremendous participation in what I consider to be vital issues. But that's part of our process,
too. That's part of why it's an incubation grant. And I think after people might hear this on the web a number of times, it's going to be archived at www.njch.org, people will be driven to it and know where it is. And I know because I work in Caldwell, New Jersey, that it's very centrally located. It's a place where people who are hearing this on the radio in the tri-state area will not have too much trouble getting to. It's not just for the people of Caldwell or West Caldwell. But let's get into this whole idea of how the humanities, basically the various studies, whether it's philosophy, history, or whatever, that have to deal with what it is to be human and to live a human life, have to do with the environment. Because when we think of the environment, we think almost in terms of science. And limited to that, the idea of air pollution, of global warming, of pollution of water. So link the two of them for us.
Sure. So environmental humanities as a discipline has especially been rising, I think, over the past 10, 20 years. And part of it has been that there's been a recognition that the kinds of questions we talk about in environmental humanities, in the humanities itself, things about value, our purposes, that those really are intimately connected to those environmental issues, that just stating things in terms of the science, biodiversity loss or climate change, does not get at the whole picture. The whole idea of climate change, for example, is driven partially by the stories we tell about ourselves, about who we are as a people and what our purposes are.
Well, how you see it affect people, for example, in terms of climate change, we've talked about the possibility, and when I say we, not you and I, but politicians and leaders and scientists have talked about the possibility of great migrations or wars. Mm-hmm. Because you'd be fighting over resources. I mean, that goes to the humanities and the quality of human life.
Sure.
Let's talk a little bit about where you're looking to go in some of these areas. And one of them is, and I didn't know this until you came to the studio today, so we could actually have a pre-interview conversation, an entire genre of literature called cli-fi.
That's right.
What is that?
So cli-fi is various kinds of novels, sometimes speculative fiction, that include aspects of climate change in them. And this can include books such as Flight Behavior by Barbara Kingsolver. She's a writer who's addressed climate change basically through a story about a young woman in Appalachia who's confronted with certain aspects of climate change and what her responses to that are, what her feelings about science and scientists are, how it connects to her way of life and her community's way of life. There are somewhat more futuristic versions of novels that are considered cli-fi. Kim Stanley Robinson just came out with a book called New York 2140, which is essentially about, New York City.
Underwater, basically?
Underwater, yeah, right. but still surviving as a city. And, okay, so what is life going to be like in New York City if as is already happening, the seas continue to rise and eventually New York and other cities around the world that are coastal cities are inundated, basically.
You know, it's funny about the power of film in particular. And of course, you know, there are some who prefer the written word and books. I love film. I was just recording earlier today in this very same studio a public affairs show that had to do with politics. And I was quoting from different movies. But it makes it more real for me. There's no doubt that something like film or literature can make what would otherwise be a very dry scientific or political discussion come to life.
Sure. And there's a writer, Amitav Ghosh, who just wrote a book recently called The Great Derangement, which is about kind of the interrelationships among climate change, literature, film, things like that. One of the things he points out is our lifestyle, really, of, let's say, involving automobiles, the kinds of places we want to live, what we think of as a neighborhood or a home that we want to live in. It's driven in many cases by the movies we saw and people who inspire us in films and in stories. So it's not trivial.
And to me, what I love, a well done film, the dialogue and the visuals can drive it home on a visceral level in a way that just simple stats just can't. Mm-hmm. It just can't. It was interesting that Al Gore actually had so much success with An Inconvenient Truth because a lot of people called it a very advanced PowerPoint display.
Yes.
But very often, you know, when you really even fictionalize something, as long as it's still rooted in the truth, you can tell possibly a greater truth.
Sure.
You're listening to Humanities Connection. I'm Bob Mann. This program is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. It's heard on the radio on WFDU 89.1 FM, but then it's archived at www.njch.org, and you can find out about all of the fascinating activities of the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. We're talking about one right now, an incubation grant for something called the Environmental Humanities, a program in the Caldwell area in Essex County. James Heinig is the person who is coordinating this. It's a collaborative effort. James, as his day job, is superintendent of schools in the Caldwell, West Caldwell School District. Tell us a little bit about Joni Adams, who that is and what definition Joni Adamson has given us for environmental humanities, how there's a tie-in of so many different disciplines.
Sure. So she is a professor who's worked a lot with environmental humanities, and her view is that there's not only this more recent phenomenon of environmental humanities where scholars in philosophy, in literary criticism, in aesthetics are having their work informed by environmental issues, but that it's also, in a sense, always been a part of what's vital in the humanities, that the humanities at its heart is about imagination and how we see ourselves, and that can be a critical part, for example, of creation myths and about the other myths and epic poems that are told about where we're going as a culture. So,
but just the idea of tying in history, philosophy, aesthetics, religious studies, literature, theater, film, and media studies. That's amazing that all those different things can come together. But this is fairly high concept, James. And you want people to realize just how much they can benefit from some of the things that you have coming up. So try to say this in a way that, you know, the general population could say, hey, I'm interested in that. And let's take it down a little bit from the philosophical realm to how am I going to spend an evening? What would you say is some of the things you'd say to entice people?
Well, I think to address that, I'd look back to what started getting me interested in this, which was that obviously as an educator, I think about what kind of future our kids are going to be graduating into. And, you know, education is often an area where you're thinking about, all right, what can we expect in the future, since obviously that gets into what kinds of skills do we want our young people to have, what kinds of experiences are they going to be involved in. And really, we often tend to, and recently, talk about STEM, about science, technology, engineering, and math. And I think the everyday person thinks about these as critical areas for themselves and for the young people who are going to be leading our society in the future. But the humanities, I think, are clearly also very critical. And I think for the kind of the average person, you need to think about, you know, the kinds of things you mentioned before. You know what? The films I see, the books that I read, they drive who I am as a person. And so how is that all connected? Where are we going as a society?
So you're really creating the link between environmental studies and the humanities. That's what I see you doing.
Well, that's what many of these scholars are doing, and that's what I think, that the cli-fi writers, that's what they're kind of forcing us to think about in a good way.
With only a minute left in the segment, obviously this could be repeated on the radio, and it's going to live in perpetuity at njch.org. So if we're promoting something, it's the first broadcast in April of 2017 will be the only time you can take advantage of this. But what do you have coming up?
Well, we do have on May 16th at the West Caldwell Public Library, we're going to be having a session, again, facilitated by Dr. John Davenport, but we'll be looking a little bit more into fiction, films such as Avatar, and Dr. Davenport will be facilitating a discussion about, you know, where do those environmental issues in films such as that take us.
And that's really interesting because it's Avatar, one of the highest, if not the highest, not adjusted for inflation. of course, it's still Gone with the Wind, believe it or not. Pictures of all time. You're not just talking about obscure indie films. You're talking about pop culture being brought into this to explain this. Just finally, where do you hope this all goes?
Well, again, coming back to my place in the schools, not that this is only about schools. I think that my hope is that our young people will be engaged with these ideas, that they'll see the value in the humanities for, you know, informing their discussions and their livelihoods, really, and that also, you know, getting back to that whole idea of participation in these little events that we're doing, you know, these are important ideas. We'd like to see some dialogue about those ideas on a broader basis in our community.
It's a New Jersey Council for the Humanities Incubation Grant regarding environmental humanities. It's centered in the Caldwell area, and our guest has been James Heinig. You're listening to Humanities Connection on WFDU 89.1 FM. I'm Bob Mann. This program is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. If you want more information about the work of the Council, please go to www.njch.org. There you can hear archives of this program and also find out detailed information about all of the wonderful things that are being done by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Have you ever heard of Sauerland? Don't feel bad if you haven't, because neither have I, at least until I started to prepare for this segment of Humanities Connection. There is something called the Sauerland Conservancy, and it's just a fascinating place that involves both the ecology and also the humanities and American history. It's a great story, and it's another thing which is tied, of course, to the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. And my guest on the phone right now is Caroline Catman, who is the executive director of the Sauerland Conservancy. And thank you very much, Caroline, for being on the program.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's first of all talk to our audience in North Jersey and New York City who may never, like myself, heard of Sauerland. Where is it? What is it?
So the Sauerland Mountain region is a 90 square mile region in central New Jersey. It actually spans seven central New Jersey municipalities and three counties, the counties of Mercer, Somerset, and Hunterdon. And what makes it a special region is the fact that it's the largest contiguous forest in central New Jersey, located in between the highlands in the north and the Pine Barrens in the south.
And you basically say that your mission with the Conservancy is to protect and promote and preserve. But since this program is about the humanities and NJCH, what exactly has the New Jersey Council for the Humanities been doing in connection with your Conservancy?
Right. So our mission is to protect, promote, and preserve the unique character of the Sauerland Mountain region, which includes the ecology and the history and the special character of the region. So as a part of the mission aspect, the history aspect of our mission, we are working with another organization called the Stoutsburg Cemetery Association to create an African American museum.
You're going to create a museum from scratch, basically?
Well, it's actually going to be at the site of a historic AME church, which is located in the Sauerlands. It dates back to the 1800s and was the sort of spiritual and social community center of the time. And there is an African-American history in this region that most people are not aware of, and it's an important region for folks. It's an important history for folks to know about and to celebrate.
And that's obviously pretty challenging when you start from scratch to create that, you know, but the fact that you have an actual historic location to begin with is an interesting aspect most museums don't necessarily have.
Right. And the grant award that we were given by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities is helping us a great deal in terms of creating the exhibits, doing a little bit more research into the history, writing a curriculum in conjunction with a local middle school to help get teachers and school children involved in the project as well.
You had an African-American community which goes way back in terms of its time and when they first came into the region.
Yeah, absolutely. And the association that we're partnering with on this project is their mission is to conserve a burial ground that was a cemetery for the African Americans who lived in the region. And this goes back to the Revolutionary War time. So there are folks buried in that church who were veterans from all the American wars dating back to that time, and their descendants were the congregants of the Mount Zion AME Church. So, you know, through working with them, we've learned a lot about the African American history of the area. There were slaves living here, and there were freed slaves living here. There are some places that were stops along the Underground Railroad. So it's very interesting, and very few people know about it.
That is amazing. Let's talk about what actually exists right now, again, in terms of educational programs, because that would be key to the mission of NJCH. The Sauerland Mountain Train Station series, what is that?
That is I guess you could call it a lecture series that we sponsor every fall. And it's a series of Sauerland Mountain-inspired educational programs. And we are lucky to live in an area where there are lots of amazing people who are experts on many, many topics. And so we sponsor presentations by some of these folks on topics such as birding in the Sauerlands, history topics. We recently had one on lichens, amphibians, all kinds of Sauerland Mountain-inspired topics. And we hold this series at the local train station in Hopewell Borough. It's a beautifully restored building. And folks love coming to it, and the topics are really interesting. So we've had a lot of success with that. And that is part of our educational mission. We don't charge for these. We ask for we have a suggested donation of $5, but anyone is welcome to attend.
Obviously, when you're involved with a statewide organization like NJCH, and we're broadcasting into New York City, and I even admitted I didn't know about the Sauerlands at all, how can people find out more about you so they can actually get there and experience this firsthand?
Yeah, one of the things I always encourage people to do is to go to our website and check out our Sauerland Trail Maps. This is an amazing place to hike. So if you go to www.sauerland.org and click on the Things to Do tab and look for Sauerland Trail Maps, and there are about 22 different preserves and parks with trails for hiking, and they're absolutely beautiful, and I encourage everyone to take the trip out here. It's very easy to get to from this listening area.
On our program, Humanities Connection, we usually have two separate segments. They're not always related, but our first segment on the program today had to do with something called environmental humanities. There's a grant to try to tie the environment with humanities, and there are a lot of links. It almost seems like down in Southland, you're kind of living environmental humanities. You're very much tied to the land and the ecology, but also to the humanities and to the history at the same time. It's not unrelated.
Absolutely. It's very closely connected. And what's really interesting is that this is a place where I think the African Americans that we're talking about chose to live because it is a place of refuge. And it really is a place of refuge for people as well as animals and some rare plants. And the reason that it's a refuge is really because of the geology, which is quite fascinating. So millions of years ago, the very, very dense and hard diabase rock foundation was formed here in this region through active underground volcanoes. And so this diabase rock foundation is so dense and so hard that the land is impossible to plow and very, very difficult for building septic systems and for accessing water because there's very little water recharge because the rock foundation is so dense. As a result, there was relatively little development here. And as a result of that, it became a place where lots of folks came to be alone, to escape, and to be able to live their lives the way they want to live. It's actually where the Lindberghs built their estate, and that's sort of one of our history claims to fame, is that the infamous Lindbergh kidnapping occurred here, and the Lindbergh estate still exists here on Lindbergh Road in the Sauerlands.
Well, that certainly deals with one of the things that's in your mission, which is preserving the unique character. Just the way that it evolved, just the way that it was created naturally is very interesting. Of course, in so many cases, especially in the case of the African Americans those many years ago, looking for a refuge was very tough, a place where you could truly be free and not oppressed was hard to find.
Absolutely. And the Mount Zion Church was actually built in an area of the Sarolins where there was at one time a huge peach industry. There were many, many thousands of peach trees here, and so that's where many African Americans came to work, and there was a peach basket building industry here. Unfortunately, there was a peach blight at one point, and so that put an end to that industry. And so what the community did was take down their church, and they brought it lower down on the mountain where they could find other jobs and rebuilt it in its present location.
Everything about it sounds beautiful, except one thing, the name, Sourland. It's almost like something you'd have, you know, as a pejorative. How did that name come into play? Or has that not necessarily been passed down?
Well, it's a great question, and you know, I wish I had one definitive answer, but there are many different theories about how that name
came to be. Give me one apocryphal one.
Probably the most accepted one is that the Dutch settlers, upon arriving here and trying to farm, found the land to be very difficult for farming, and sour, S-A-U-E-R, is their word for bad. So it became Sourland.
That actually makes sense. I was even thinking about that when you were saying about the inability to farm or to plow. What did people live on? If you went there as a refuge, you had no city to go to. Were they hunters? Did they simply just try to do the best they could with small gardens? How did the settlers survive?
Interesting. Well, going way back to the Native Americans, the Lenape, who were in this area, they would set up their villages in the lower areas of the mountain where they could fish in the river and do some farming, and they would venture up onto the ridge just for hunting purposes in small groups. And then in more recent times, there was some logging here on the mountain. At one point, it was almost deforested. There were some redware potteries up here on the mountain. I think there were three or four of them that no longer exist, but we do know where they were. So that was a little bit of an industry until the pottery industry in Trenton sort of took over, and these potteries here closed down.
With only 1 minute left in our segment, what would you say, Caroline, is the most important thing that the public should know about the Sourlands?
They should know that it is here. It is a wonderful place to visit, to hike, to do birding, photography. It is worthy of protection because it is a really important stopover for migratory birds along the Atlantic Flyway. And it actually contains very critical forest, grassland, and wetland habitat. So it needs to be appreciated and preserved.
And, as part of our format for the show and involving grants, et cetera, we can't become political, but you do get involved in advocacy, and you do have an awful lot that is going on there in terms of even just tours, hiking tours and trails. It just seems like an absolutely fabulous place. Thank you very much, Caroline, for telling us about it.
My pleasure, and I hope you come to visit us sometime.
I certainly will take a drive down there. Caroline Catman, who is Executive Director of the Sourland Conservancy. That's it for this episode of Humanities Connection. I'm Bob Mann. Thank you for listening. You can join us on the radio on the final Sunday of every month at WFDU 89.1 FM, and you can get more information by going on the web to www.njch.org to learn more about the New Jersey Council for the Humanities.